Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Happy Thursday, everybody.
Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt.
Happy 2025.
Yeah, right?
Look at us.
It feels like a sci-fi
Look
year.
Look at us. We're it here. Does. We're in it. You know what happened a decade like a ago, Zach? Year.
A decade ago.
You know, some of the things in sports Goodness. We were talking about a decade ago, or about to talk about, because some of them haven't happened yet. Legion of Boom. Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm.
Steph Curry becoming Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ezekiel Elliott in college football.
He was really good at Ohio State. He was really good.
I saw
at Ohio
a post
State.
This morning, and it had like all of these different pictures from like the year of 2015, and I was like, man,
2015
this is...
does not feel like a decade ago.
No.
The Cam Newton MVP year was awesome. Steph Curry, I mean, obviously he's in his mid-30s now. It feels like he's been around forever. You forget.
That was the like emergence of Steph Curry.
You forget his early career was just hampered by injuries, namely I think his ankles and stuff like that. So like, he eventually got healthy and then becomes the Steph Curry we all now know. And I think I think
he's one of those athletes that's like universally like, yeah, he's a good dude.
He's a good dude. Fine. A lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
The Golden State Warriors were good until Durant kind of showed up.
Yeah,
I think
they
so.
They were fun. Like,
yeah,
that run they had where it was like, oh, all these guys were like kind of like homegrown. They're all like out of nowhere, like figured it out on their own.
They were the antithesis of the super team.
Yeah, but they all came from like
they were drafted,
grew
there.
Together.
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't like they all went out and built that team. It was before that era of let's just go out and buy free agents.
And then they became that.
You live long enough to either die a hero or become a villain. So.
Yeah, I mean that quote is always so true. We did have college football yesterday. Do want to mention, though, of course, before we get rolling here as well, the horrific terror attack in New Orleans. It did cause the Sugar Bowl between Notre Dame and Georgia to get moved to today at 4 p.m. Eastern. That'll be on ESPN. That's the last of the quarterfinal games as Penn State and Boise State played on Tuesday. Yesterday saw Texas and Arizona State and then Ohio State and Oregon. We'll talk a little bit about that as well, of course, me being a Texas fan. And it so far being the best playoff game we've had in quite a while, not for me personally. I imagine every neutral fan it was great. For me, it was awful. But we'll talk about that. Sabres play tonight as well. They're on the road. It's a bit of a road trip they've got going on now. They're in Colorado. That game is at 9 tonight. Pre-game will get going at 8. We'll talk to Paul Hamilton.
Sabres after dark?
Oh, sure.
Kind of.
We'll talk to Paul Hamilton at 10:30. Bills also have some news today on that. We'll get to that here in just a second. But we'll talk Bills with Sal Capaccio at 11:30. And on that, the Pro Bowl rosters were announced, which always feels incredibly random whenever those are announced. That it's end of the year. You never know when, and it just kind of, here you go. All right, have fun.
It's the day after New Year's Day. Yeah. Like, what are we doing? Like, pick a better day than just January 2nd.
It was like 9 in the morning, right? 9 in the morning.
Yeah. Here you go. Like,
Have fun.
Like, I mean, I'm sure, like, the way the holiday fell this year, I'm sure there's still people that are just, like, waking up right now because they took today and tomorrow off. Like,
yeah, you wake up with good news.
I guess so. Well, some people got good news. There are four teams that have no good news on the Pro Bowl. Four teams in the NFL with no Pro Bowlers. Zach,
I think you get all of them.
Can you guess them?
New York Jets.
Yep.
Tennessee Titans.
Yep.
New Orleans Saints.
Yep.
I almost was going to say Raiders, but ooh, there's no way. Yeah, no, Bowers.
Brock, yeah. Bowers.
New England Patriots.
Incorrect.
Who? Man, they have a Pro Bowler.
Apparently. Yeah, I don't know who it was. I haven't found it yet, but.
All right. NFC or AFC?
AFC.
AFC.
Okay. I was about to say Giants, but then I thought Neighbors. I was going to say Giants.
I think Neighbors got it.
Jacksonville?
Nope.
Who is it?
Come on. Think about it.
Cleveland? No, Miles Garrett.
Lackluster season.
I've got Tennessee already.
Fell
Jets,
off of
Saints.
Expectations of winning their division. Come on.
No. Indianapolis?
Nope.
No, Jonathan Taylor.
Closer to home.
Oh, boy.
Not geographically, by the way.
Oh, okay. I have no idea. I'm blanking.
Miami.
Oh, wow.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep. No Pro Bowlers in Miami. No,
that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, so
their offense never got off the ground. I mean, the whole thing with Tyreek Hill this year was he's killing our fantasy teams.
No, the four teams with no Pro Bowlers this year, the Jets, the Saints, the Dolphins, and the Titans.
I'm happy I got three out of the four.
Yeah, good for you.
Pretty quick succession. I felt good about that.
I really need to know now, who on the Giants?
Had to be Neighbors, right? No. It wouldn't be Neighbors. Yeah, who on the Giants?
Ah, Dexter Lawrence.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the better defensive tackles.
Who
in
else did you say that was, like, surprising? That did have one?
Well, the Raiders with Bowers.
Jacksonville's punter.
Is he their one? Is he really their one? That's tough.
No,
that's Bill Stroud,
the other one from Jacksonville.
Oh, okay.
Their long snapper.
Man, that hurts. That's tough.
Those are the only two, I think. I'm trying to skim through here. I don't see anybody else.
Well,
Jonathan Taylor made it from Indianapolis, so there's a Colts guy.
The Bills, though, are kind of closer to those teams than many of the others. They only have two on the immediate roster,
kind of
being Josh Allen and Deion Dawkins.
Kind of surprising. Oh, they do have some alternate. I think an alternate in DeMar Hamlin.
First team alternate is Connor McGovern and James Cook. Third alternate is DeMar Hamlin. Fourth alternate, Terrell Bernard. Fifth alternate, Reggie Gilliam and Ed Oliver. Reggie Gilliam, Ed Oliver, Spencer Brown, and Dalton Kincaid.
Okay, so there's a lot of alternates in there.
There are a lot of alternates. This is the least surprising thing to me ever. The Bills, most they got, I believe, was in 22 with eight, which is a lot. That's a ton. But they typically, even in their good years, are around like four or five, where the opposite. And I tweeted this out. I did not mean this disrespectfully, but it is what it is. The Ravens typically lead the way with like 9 or 10, like all the time.
Yeah.
And to be fair, like since they've drafted Lamar Jackson, they've had as high as like 13. I think in 2019 they had 13. They had 8 last year, I think, 9 this year. Their first wide receiver in Zay Flowers in team history and be made.
That's really cool.
They've had guys like Jacoby Jones and someone else who went as a return man,
but never
Zay
as a wide
Flowers,
receiver.
The first guy as a wide receiver.
Real quick, a thought on, you know, the Dolphins not having one.
Mm-hmm.
Travis Kelce gets selected as the second tight end behind Brock Bowers. I think rightfully so, because Brock Bowers has been incredible.
Mark Andrews should be on that. Literally
nothing. Mark Andrews should be there. You know who else should be there? Jonnu Smith.
Jonnu Smith.
As someone who picked him up in fantasy football like early on in the season.
Give me Jonnu Smith.
He deserves it. This man went out there with almost nothing, had the best season of his career at 821 yards, 7 touchdowns, on 79 receptions.
Yeah.
As a tight end on a bad team. I'm just saying, I think he should have been on there. I don't think Travis Kelce should have been on there.
There was a run in November where Jonnu Smith had like 15 targets every game, it felt like.
Travis Kelce has 823 yards. Okay, five less yards than Jonnu Smith on 97 catches, so almost 20 more catches. And how many touchdowns Travis Kelce has? Three.
Oh, wow.
Three touchdowns compared to 7. So, again, I'm not saying that he was snubbed, and I'm not saying I want a Dolphins player to get accolades or something, but he helped me get to a fantasy championship. So
real quick, I
got to give him his flowers.
I do want to bring up, because this gives me a good excuse to bring up Brock Bowers, because the Raiders are a non-factor, and they have been all year.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the best rookie seasons. I mean, he has one more game, sure.
Yeah.
that's one of the best rookie seasons of all time, especially at the tight end position. Him having 108 catches already in a career. I mean, you can argue now, right away, because his quarterbacks are Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew and not Spencer Rattler, Desmond Ridder, that he's already the best receiving tight end in the league. He's kind of what everyone wanted Kyle Pitts to be when he came out and was, you know, a top five draft pick, and everyone was thinking, like, that's the guy. That's the guy that's going to change everything. It turned out to be Bowers, and he looks awesome. I think the Raiders should be a team that is potentially looking to trade for J.J. McCarthy because how bad the quarterback class is. I think you bring him in, he already is kind of an adult in the locker room sort of deal. I think McCarthy really is a coach's dream. Mm-hmm. I joke about it a lot, but I really do think that. And then he's got the athletic ability to kind of back it up. He sat behind Kevin O'Connell and Sam Darnold all year just learning, just soaking up all that knowledge. And with already having, I think, an elite weapon there, I think they could be really, really good for a team like the Raiders if they want to go make a trade for McCarthy, because I do think the Vikings will pay Darnold. And then if that happens, take a swing. I don't necessarily know where they're at in the draft order. I'm not really in love with either Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders in terms of building your franchise around them, especially a franchise like the Raiders that is not in any way like the best landing spot for a guy.
No, because you have Brock Bowers, and that's it.
And that's it. And I think someone like with J.J. McCarthy's temperament, I think could do okay in mm-hmm. that area. If the Raiders were to turn around, great. I would have said the Bills in 2018 was not a great spot for a quarterback to mature and grow into what he is, and I was proven wrong.
Right.
You know,
right.
But the Jets routinely prove people right.
But if you look at the culture around the Bills when Allen first gets here, like you look at the past mm-hmm. of the people that were here before Allen, and like what he was going to be working with or who he was going to be working with, it looked like a better potential than it does with, you know, the Raiders, the Jets, mm-hmm. places like that. Because when you look at who Allen had when he first came in here, it was John McDermott, it was Brian Daboll, I think. Yeah, Brian Daboll was here right away. And you look at what they came from, and it's like, yeah, you know, you don't know anything about these guys. You don't know where they could go. They could flop. They could be, you know, not what you want for a rookie quarterback, or they could be great because you can see the pedigree they've came from and who they've coached with and where they've coached, that it looks like a better.
Dable was here in 2018. It was Rick Dennison was the 2017 guy.
Mm, okay.
So he was here immediately with Josh.
But right. Well, and that's my point, is like you're starting out with complete unknowns, but you can look at kind of where they've came from and say, you know, there's potential there, but you don't know anything yet. With the Raiders and the Jets, you look at what they have and it's like, sure, I guess there's potential, but it doesn't look great if you look at the past and you mm-hmm. look at, you know, what they've come from. It's not like they have a good foundation or anything. I mean, Antonio Pierce is fine, I guess. The Jets are a complete mess. I mean, what are they going to do? They're already talking about moving off of Rodgers and Devontae Adams in the offseason.
Well, I mean, they should.
Well, they should, but I'm just like, that just shows you how much of a mess that team is. Like,
have you looked at the draft order, by the way?
No, I have not yet. I know,
if you're the Raiders or the Jets and you do want to move on to another quarterback, like, you have to trade for somebody like McCarthy, or you have to hope that Darnold hits free agency.
But again, it's still the problem of what situation are you putting him in? Like, mm-hmm. if I'm Sam Darnold looking at free agent options and the Jets, the Giants, and the Raiders come calling, I'm going to the Giants.
Potentially if Dable's still there.
Even if Dable's not there, you have Malik Nabers. And I'm sure they would stick offensive-minded if they're, you know, moving on from Dable, which I don't think they are at this point. I think they would have done it by now, personally. But you look at all the potential teams that could go for a guy like Sam Darnold, and, like, I just, the Jets and the Raiders are in the worst draft, the one of two potentially good quarterbacks. They're not even, like, generational talents.
Vegas was there, and then they've won the last two.
Right. But they're not bad enough, or they're not good enough, I should say, to attract better talent. And they're not in a good position where if they go get a guy like Sam Darnold and he is okay, which, by the way, he would never go back to the Jets. If he went back to the Jets, that would be insane.
I want it so bad.
It would be wild. Like, for him to decide that, not for the Jets to go after him. The Jets should absolutely pursue a quarterback like that. But for Sam Darnold to go, yeah, I want to go back to the place that destroyed my career and made me feel like I was the worst football player in the world.
Man, I want that so bad. I want that so bad. Because what do you? What's he say like in his introductory press conference? Like, I'm back, baby.
I'm back. Walks off stage.
And that's it. Oh man, it'd be good. It'd be fun. It would be a lot of fun. We'll talk more on the draft, obviously, when that season comes around.
I want to bring up something with the Pro Bowl real quick here. Mm-hmm. So, I was looking at some numbers on Pro Bowlers in the league in looking where how it correlates with the top teams. Mm-hmm. Of the top six teams in the NFL. You got the Chiefs in order here. You got Chiefs, Lions, Vikings, Bills, Eagles, Ravens. Pro Bowl numbers from 1 to 6 go 5, 7, 6, 2, 6, 9. The outlier being the Bills with 2. That, I think, does more for Josh Allen's MVP case than anything he has done all season.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think the case is already done. You saw the betting numbers at the end of last week, where it was like, okay, he's minus money still.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to play the final week of the season.
I mean, his team is fourth in the NFL, and it's him and one of his linemen that are the two Pro Bowlers, and then the other guy, Lamar Jackson. Who, again, I don't want to discount his season because he's had a great year. He's been a great player. He has eight other people with him in the Pro Bowl, and sure, some of them are defensive, but there's a fair bit that are offensive as well. Mm-hmm. So. I think that does a lot for his MVP campaign, if there is still anything like that going on. Like you said, it's still minus money. So like,
yeah, I think it's all but done. But the fact that they have nine Pro Bowlers, I think as well, they have nine Pro Bowlers and five losses. They're going to be the three seed and had to fight to the end to win their division. It's not even anything I can really say. That's Baltimore every year since Lamar Jackson has gotten there. They win a lot of games. They have a lot of Pro Bowlers. They have two playoff wins. What else am I supposed to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's who they are. I mean, I'm fine with it. Again, they have two playoff wins, so it's not like it takes like a ton away. The Bills have won a playoff game every year since 2020.
Five of the nine Pro Bowlers are offensive, counting Lamar Jackson.
Mm-hmm. I will say, though, the biggest snub and somebody that I think is going to be really funny because he's going to carry on the tradition of Bills secondary members not making a Pro Bowl, making an All-Pro, is going to be Christian Benford.
That was pretty crazy.
He absolutely should be on the AFC Pro Bowl list
100%. Who's on there right now? We've got J.C. Horn.
That's the NFC.
I'm sorry.
The AFC, we've got graphic. Marlon Humphrey, Derek Stingley Jr., Patrick Surtain, and Denzel Ward. I mean, honestly, I think you could probably take off Humphrey.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
And throw in Benford.
Yeah.
I thought he was actually going to, like, the voting was done, but in my mind, it was like when he had that interception over Rodgers,
mm-hmm.
it felt like there, I was like, and there it is. Like, he has, like, kind of a big moment. It's not really a huge moment, but it's one of them where it's like, and there it is. It's another pick for him. He's good. And we move on.
Marlon Humphrey this year, though, six interceptions.
He does have six. Never mind then. All right.
And a touchdown.
Does he really?
Mm-hmm. And two forced fumbles. Pretty good year. That's pretty good if you're Marlon Humphrey. I mean, like, that's...
Stingley. Is it Ward, then, that's kind of the outlier there?
Let me see.
Denzel Ward. I mean, if we're just going off interception numbers, he has two.
Mm.
That's not a great way to go off of it because once you can become a good corner, I mean, we saw this with Tre'Davious White. He made an All-Pro, and then teams stop targeting the guy.
Yeah, because you look at his other numbers. He's had 19 passes deflected or defended or whatever PD stands for. Passes defended by a defensive player.
Yep.
So, I mean, he's getting the ball thrown at him. He just might not be getting a chance to intercept it, I guess, if you want to put it that way, but he's making the plays.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'm not saying Christian Benford's not, but the four guys in there, like, I feel like they're all on the same level, but maybe just some of them have better stats or something like that. But I feel like if you're going off eye test, I think Benford probably gets in there over some of these guys.
Folks, I think Benford's going to be an All-Pro. It may not be first team, but I think he'll be an All-Pro.
But, like, I mean, Pat Surtain, by far.
He's great. I thought, had a really good shot at Defensive Player of the Year.
Really?
For Denver, he makes that defense go for them. I think it's a bad matchup for a team like the Bills where they don't typically have like that number one receiver you go to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's a bad matchup because he kind of sits on the one and kind of let the chips fall as they may. That's why I think it's a bad matchup for them. But he has been incredible all year long. And you remember, you look back, when there was like that feeling that he was maybe going to get traded. And like every Denver reporter was like, guys, he's not leaving. Like Surtain is the guy on this defense, and he proved it thoroughly this year. And their team that just needs to avoid being the 2004 Buffalo Bills and beat some of the backups of the Kansas City Chiefs. With that being said, though, that is a game I'm excited to watch because Carson Wentz, he's not that great, But Josh, and I say this a lot whenever Wentz is brought up, his career makes no sense to me, even with some of the context. Like, I need to know everything that was going on in those Eagles locker rooms and film rooms and everything like that, because, I mean, we talked about it, the MVP stuff. He was going to win the 2017 MVP. He tore his ACL with three games remaining.
Yep.
And Brady was close enough to him to surpass him. Then, 2 years later, he's a 4,000-yard passer without a single receiver being over 500 yards. That's incredible. Allen, you know, we're talking about an MVP, and he runs a little bit more than Wentz did, especially at that point. Allen isn't even going to hit 4,000 yards, and he does have some guys that are up there in, like, the 700, 800-yard range.
Mm-hmm.
And Carson Wentz is sitting there going, like, I have Zach Ertz and a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I have.
You can never, ever talk bad about Carson Wentz in front of me, because I will defend that man forever. He has been bruised and battered for his entire career and still almost I'm not saying he's the reason the Eagles won the Super Bowl in 2017 because he wasn't playing, but he is certainly the reason they got there.
Well, he got them the one seed.
He pushed them so Nick Foles could finish the job. And Nick Foles did great. I'm not discounting what he did either, but it's just,
I think the way that team was playing, though, they were the best team in football. I think he would have gotten them at least to the Super Bowl. Maybe he doesn't beat Tom Brady, but that team was on a different level.
Yeah.
It was, like, that's the thing, too. The play he tears his ACL, he scores against the Rams.
Yeah.
That ultimately wins him the game and gets him the one seed. But again, I mean, you look at the 2020 season, though. His numbers plummet. He plays just 12 games. They go 3-8-1, 16 touchdowns to 15 picks. His completion percentage the year prior was 63.9. He goes down to 57.4. I mean, his passer rating goes down from 93.1. And then the 2 years prior to that, it was above 100 to 72.8. His QB rating goes down from, he was in the 60s, as high as 78.6 in 2017 when they were, that's the year he was going to potentially win the MVP. They were elite on third down, plummets all the way to 41.9. I mean, I don't know what happened that year, like 100% off of memory.
Wait, which year was it?
2020. And it all collapses. Even sack numbers. He took 28 in 17, 31, and then 37, and then up to 50.
Which,
it's just unbelievable.
Which year was the year? Because I remember Jadeveon Clowney hurt him in a playoff game.
That's 2019. That's the year prior.
Yeah. I'm looking at. Yeah, here it is. Yeah.
That's in that playoff game.
He only played like the first quarter because he has one completion on four attempts for three yards.
He was gone after like their second drive.
And once again, it's another time of he was fine. He was great. He had that was the year of 4,000 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that mixed with the knee injury. It's just, it was too much for him for the next season. Because
I also wonder how much them drafting Jalen Hurts in the second round really did it to him.
I don't really know if
there
was something
mentally wrong.
I don't know. I don't think it's a mental thing there. I think it was he's been hurt so many times in so many different ways that injuries in sports are a tough thing. You can't trust your body eventually.
Because after the torn ACL, mentally, he wasn't able to run nearly as much. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, look at his rushing yards from the time he tears his ACL to after the fact. Like, he was consistently rushing for a decent amount in the first two seasons and then just kind of stops and then starts again in 2019 and 2020. But you just went through the numbers. He was sacked 50 times.
Yeah, it was more. His ability to scramble was gone.
Right. He was just having to get out of the pocket. He had always get out of the pocket with those teams. But, you know, it's just frustrating, like, seeing a career like that. That's one of my favorite what-if careers. Like, if he didn't even tear his ACL, or if he just didn't get hurt when he came back, like, if he didn't get hurt in the playoffs, I wonder, you know, would he still be on the Eagles, or would it have gone differently with how he left the Eagles?
Yeah,
so,
potentially. He was a guy after the 2017 year, like, when I looked at Josh Allen, I'm like, if he's just Carson Wentz, I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was happy for most of my life. It was like, cool, if he's just average, if he's Andy Dalton, I'm thrilled. Because then I'm going to have a guy that's here for 10 years and I can feel somewhat comfortable in, and there will be years where he pops off. If he's Carson Wentz, I'm through the roof. And he surpassed him in every way and kind of, to a certain extent, hit the ceiling that Carson Wentz himself was just never able to hit. They're both 6'5". They're both like 230, 240.
Both come from small schools.
Yep, and then where Wentz picked up a ton of injuries that kind of derailed his career, Allen didn't, and Allen fixed his mechanics, got better across the board. Or even look at that 2017 year, that team was just absurd on third downs, and that was a huge reason to their success. 803-0550, the number to call. Want to get your thoughts on the Bills Pro Bowl. I guess snubs. They only get two guys in, Josh Allen and Deion Dawkins, players like James Cook, who leads the league in rushing touchdowns, Christian Benford, one of the best cornerbacks in football, Spencer Brown as well, one of the better tackles, right tackles specifically in the NFL, don't get named to the Pro Bowl, though two of those three are on the alternates. Christian Benford, a full out-and-out snub on that end. But coming up next, we'll talk a little on the Sabres. It's been a little while since we've talked to Paul Hamilton, so we'll do that after a quick timeout. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Byram holding with a shot, rebound behind him, they score! Sabres tie the game seconds after, giving up the first goal of the game. Zucker in the blue paint got to this one. It's 1-1 in Dallas.
Dan Dunleavy there on the call. Sabres ultimately would lose that game 4-2, although Jason Zucker has been on a bit of a tear as of recent. Three goals in the last four games. Sabres, though, again, did lose to Dallas. They're back in action tonight, continuing their road trip here. They take on Colorado tonight at 9 p.m. Colorado, though, on a five-game win streak. Start out the year not in the greatest of spots. They've really turned it around. And for more on the Sabres tonight, we go to the Western Hotline as Paul Hamilton joins the show. Paul, Happy New Year. How was yesterday for you?
Thank you. Happy New Year to you. Yeah, the Avalanche of 9-11, if you want to go even further. So, I wonder how much the Sabres think about what happened here in Buffalo.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, Colorado's a weird team. Like, everyone kind of assumed they'd get going. So, to me, it's not even surprising now. Like you said, they won 9-11. It's not even surprising. They're a really, really good team. But, I mean, going into this road trip, it's nice to see the Sabres not – I don't want to say and be mean and be like, well, they're watchable now. But, I mean, they've been much better. They look like the team during their own little win streak there where they're scoring a lot. The special teams look much better. They've not turned a corner yet. They're still well below 500. But, again, they're watchable.
Yeah, it was a shame for them in that game in Dallas where it was either a tie game or a one-goal game. Buffalo coming in, it had power play goals in 3 out of 4 games and were 4 for 10 at a 40% clip. So the power play, at least for a little bit, was doing very well. They never got a power play opportunity, which maybe, who knows? You know, could that have changed the game? We don't know because we didn't get to see it. But usually all year long, most people would say, well, don't get a power play opportunity because it takes all your momentum away. But, in this case, they never had one. There was only one power play in the whole game, and the Sabres, by the way, killed it off. Their penalty kill, and that's probably why they won three games in a row and were competitive in the other two, is because the special teams have woken up again. And they were, remember when they won 7 out of 9?
Yeah, exactly.
They were number one on the power play in the penalty kill in those 9 games and number 4 on the power play. You know, you win when special teams do well. You normally don't when they don't. And then the special teams floundered. They floundered. Now the special teams are back to doing fairly well again.
You wonder and or hope, I mean, on my end it's more hope, that maybe the lessons Ruff and the coaching staff are trying desperately to instill in these guys are finally starting to stick. I don't know. I mean, Paul, you've even mentioned it too. During the losing streak, they'll end it, and they'll probably go on a winning streak again. Like, this is just what this team does, and for me, at least, that's been, like, why it's a little difficult to, like, really buy into, you know, Quinn starting to score or stuff like that, because it's just like, I almost expected this.
Yeah, well, this group's been together for 2 full years and however many games they've played this year, and they've shown us nothing in all that time that would tell us that they're going to go on anything more than a 3-game winning streak, which they've done 4 times this year. And all four times they haven't been able to, you know, get that fourth win. I mean, the first time it was against the Florida Panthers, they lost 5-2. Second time it was against the Montreal Canadiens, they lost 7-5. Third time it was against the Minnesota Wild, a game they outplayed the Wild, but, you know, Wild's goaltender stood on his head and they lost 1-0. And now the fourth time they've done it, they lose 4-2 to the Dallas Stars.
Paul, looking at, like, you know, the whole winning streak, losing streak thing that we're constantly fixated on here because it's been a problem over these past few years, but looking at the upcoming games for the Sabres here, they did, you know, somewhat put up a fight against Dallas, and they're one of the better teams in the NHL. Now they have Colorado and Vegas coming up here. It seems like, you know, what we've seen from the Sabres in recent years is they get up for the good competition. And do you think that can continue here tonight against teams like Colorado? Like, not to say Colorado's been the best all year, but they have the same core that they've had for the few years now. And I wonder if there's got to be a turning point here somewhere. And I feel like even though it's a loss to Dallas, it still could be viewed as like, hey, they still played decent anyway, right?
Yeah, the years all combined to me. It was either last year or the year before. I believe it was the year before, but I'm not positive. They played a really good game here in Colorado and won. They were a couple of years ago, they were a very good road team. They couldn't buy a win at home, and it's what cost them the playoffs because of their home record. Well, many things cost them the playoffs, but they were close. But, they have played well in this building before. They just lost to the Dallas Stars, but they beat the Dallas Stars earlier in the year. They should have beaten the Colorado Avalanche earlier in the year. That's the game that basically blew up their season that really they've never recovered from. And they haven't played Vegas yet. They did all right in the game in Washington. That was a 4-2 loss, but they were competitive in that game. And those are games that, they've already played all but Vegas and done pretty well in. And look at what the Montreal Canadiens did in Vegas. They got behind, I believe it was 2-0, and they won the game the other night. And now Montreal, starting with the Buffalo win, have won 6 out of 7 games.
Paul, what have you seen from Rasmus Dahlin since his return? I mean, he gets the second star of the week for the NHL last week, 3-0, 7 points, 7 assists. Didn't do anything in terms of the score sheet on against Dallas, but, I mean, you've been talking about it, where he really hadn't looked good all year, you know, going back and forth between, you know, is it health, what's going on? And then, you know, after him kind of saying, this is the last game I'm missing, he performed really darn well.
No, he has. You know, now that he has the back spasms at least under control, he said it's the best he's felt all year. It's the best he's played all year by far. I mean, absolutely by far. So, excuse me. So, yes. So, I think he's played very well defensively. He's killed plays. He's, you know, helped out with other when things go bad defensively. He stopped a goal in Dallas that was headed over the goal line, and he dove back into the crease and pulled it out before the whole puck got over the goal line. I think it partially had, but the whole puck hadn't. So he saved them a goal there. And, of course, you talked about offensively, where he had tied a team record for defensemen getting 4 assists in one game, and then in the next game he had 2 assists in the first period, giving him 6 assists in 4 periods. He was, you know, contributing the way Rasmus Dahlin can contribute at both ends of the ice.
Paul, last thing for me here. College football yesterday, New Year's Day, big day for bowl games. Your Iowa State Cyclones were like, it seems like the first national victim to Camp Scataboo. My Texas Longhorns also were. Did you watch any of the football yesterday?
Yeah, after I flew here to Denver, I got a chance to see all the fourth quarter of that game.
And, I'm sorry.
The Iowa State game, they deserved to lose. I mean, mm-hmm. Arizona State was the better team by far. I think I told you after that game, but with Scataboo, it was like 10-year-olds jumping on his back, and he was carrying them 40 yards downfield.
That's exactly how it feels.
Like 3 of them. Mm-hmm. It's just a man amongst boys, and it really showed me what a good team Arizona State was. And I gave them a chance to win that game even before it started. You know, they're better than people think they are, and they really should have won the game. I mean, they got behind. It was funny. I had checked into the hotel that I think they were behind Texas had just scored 24-7. Mm-hmm. By the time I got to dinner, it was tied. It was so I didn't see the comeback, but then I saw all the overtimes and everything, and their defense left them at the end. I mean, Texas had a fourth and long to lose the game. If they don't get the first down or the touchdown, game's over. And they got the touchdown. And then they got the touchdown on their next play to take the lead, and then they got the two-point conversion. And then you knew that was it for Arizona State, and sure, it sure was it. But, they were a better team. They deserved to be where they were, and they showed it with the game they played yesterday.
Yeah, I think that was unquestionably the best game so far of this revamped 12-team playoff. And now with the Big 12, Texas and Oklahoma being out, there is sort of this void of who's going to be the big dog on campus for the Big 12. Colorado, of course, has a shout. Iowa State's always been a good team. They were in the Big 12 championship this year. Arizona State, though, Kenny Dillingham, it's his second year. He's in his mid-30s. He's a young guy with a lot of energy. They could be like that sleeping giant in this new-look Big 12. Should be a lot of fun.
I love how like Nebraska left. You know, Nebraska and Oklahoma were the class of the Big 12, even back when it was the Big 8.
Yeah.
I mean, they were like number one and two in the country back then. I mean, they were the class of college football. Nebraska leaves, and they're nothing. I mean, they're just nothing. And now Oklahoma, I just love that Oklahoma left and was finished one game under 500 and lost to Navy in their bowl game.
It's the best.
That was awesome. And enjoy your new league, boys.
Texas is doing all right. Oklahoma, not so much. Nebraska, not so much. All right, Paul. I would say, you know, get ready for a long night, but you're in Denver, so it shouldn't be too bad tonight. But enjoy the game. We'll talk again soon.
All right, take care.
That was Paul Hamilton there on the Wester Hotline. For us here in Buffalo, the game does get going at 9 o'clock in Colorado, with pregame getting going at 8. Brian Koziel and Paul Hamilton will have you covered right here on WGR for that. Yeah, yesterday's game, Josh, stressful. Stressful.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't have been. It was 17-5. You were fine. Finish it.
I thought the game was over as soon as the punt return.
Silas Bolden, yeah,
I thought 14-0. I thought the game was over.
Yeah, go back to my Twitter. I said they're going to put up 50. I felt
I remember
really
I
stupid.
Saw that. I saw that.
I remember I texted you, and I didn't get a response for a little while.
Nobody did.
Nobody did. But like, it was just like, man, he's got to be going through it. It was a great game, though. Honestly, neutral fan perspective.
Oh, it was awesome.
Incredible game, especially because of every single other game that's happened so far is just
it hasn't been great. They've been blowouts. Even the Rose Bowl later that night is a blowout.
Well, and I will say about that too. Like, a lot of people were seeing that and saying, "See, look, even the good teams, like we just got to go back, get rid of the 12 team. It's already bad." It's like, no, some teams just have bad days. Like, Oregon was undefeated. They had to have lose at some point, and it was going to be a stupid loss. They beat Ohio State earlier in the year. That's a game where you look at it and you go, no, this was just an any given Wednesday in this case for a team to just come out and lose. Other games you can look at and say, yeah, no, they're like Texas was building up to be a blowout. I'm trying to think of some of the other games that were.
Indiana played very scared. I would say coached very scared against
Notre Dame. Penn State played very well, but Boise State just.
If Genty didn't have some of those turnovers, though, I think that game was much closer. Yeah, it's more. When they played SMU, that was. Why is SMU here?
Right. So again, I get what people are saying, but at the same time, it's just like, especially when you look at that game specifically, the Rose Bowl. Yeah, sure, Ohio State blew out Oregon, but Oregon is not a bad team. They just had a bad day.
It's also it's college football,
right?
And that's where it has frustrated me a little bit with people. I personally think the perfect playoff is six teams, because ultimately I don't think there are actually 12 great teams to compete for a national title. It's not like basketball where you can have upwards of all of, one, two, and the three seeds all could genuinely can be competing for a national title and good enough to win a national title. Typically in college football, if you have three great teams, you're in a really good spot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think six would have been perfect. I think 12 can maybe be a bit too much. But it allowed teams like Arizona State, who are building a program, and again, they're in their second year with Kenny Dillingham, their quarterback, who I think Sam Leavitt is an NFL guy in 2 years. I think he has all the tools you'll want. His best receiver by a wide margin, Jordan Tyson, was not in. I think it was something I heard on the broadcast, like 48% of their wide receiver production comes from him or something ridiculous like that. He didn't even have his best guy. He was still, Playing his heart out, and he was doing great. Scadaboo is vomiting profusely, still playing. Like, they're building a program. Scadaboo's going to go to the NFL, but I really like what they're building there, and I do think they can be a main member in the Big 12. And on that, too, I think it was really good for a Big 12 team specifically with all of the stereotype around the Big 12 of, like, they don't play defense, for them to really take it to Texas's offense for most of that game, really outside of, like, the first two drives, was really, really good by them. I mean, they fell up at the end. Texas kind of, it's the old meme where the guy's playing with his back, against the chair, and then it's like, oh, all right, I got to lean forward. I got to lock in. That's kind of what they did. But Texas plays with their food, and Arizona State was willing to take it to them. And it was a fun game if you're a neutral. For me as a Texas fan, I wanted to die during most of the second half. The entire third quarter, most of the fourth quarter. 803-0550, the number two call. Allie, we'll get to you after a quick timeout. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. And this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Hope you had a wonderful new year. We go now to the phones and we get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Allie joins the show. Allie, how are we doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you, fellas?
Doing very
well. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Yeah, I had two things. I have a useless piece of sports trivia for you that's one of my favorites. So I'm from Wyoming originally, which is how I became a Bills fan. And so Carson Wentz, you guys were talking about him and Josh. I don't know if you know this, but he and Josh actually have had the same college head coach. Craig Bohl coached at North Dakota and recruited Carson, and then was obviously the only, D1 coach that offered Josh anything, and, the rest is history. So anyways, when people talk about the two of them, that's one of my favorite little random pieces of trivia that not everybody knows. So he just retired, coach retired last year, and we miss him very much in Pokes country, but hell of a coach. So, and then I will say this, the Denver playoff situation, everyone in Denver is pretty sure they're going to come in to Buffalo and boat race us. And I'm not someone who talks a lot of stuff at work or whatever, because I like to just let Josh and the boys do the talking on my behalf. And I just think it's really funny because they're really sure that defense is just going to come boat race us. And I just don't know if they have a single clue what's coming to them.
That is a little wild. Yeah. Thanks for the call. That's wild. Because I'm usually
the confidence, the swagger. I love it. Good for you. But no,
and maybe this is because of the scar tissue I developed, growing up in the drought. I've never been that confident that I think I'm going to boat race team. Even when we've talked about, who would you rather have in the playoffs, Miami, Cincinnati, or Denver? I say Denver only purely out of the fact of it's a rookie quarterback. But I think every game in the playoffs is going to be a stress fest. And that just is what it is. It's the playoffs. I get it. If you have a blowout, good for you. Those don't happen often in the NFL playoffs. Denver, have you watched your team play for the last month? Bo Nix hasn't even been playing that well. And outside of a 70-yard throw to Marvin Mims against Cincinnati, you couldn't muster much offense against a bad defense in Cincinnati. Buffalo's defense, it is what it is. It is not that great this year. I do think preparing for the 2025 draft, they will probably go defense early and often. And that's fine. I agree they should. Walter Nolan on Ole Miss could be a guy that we talk about a lot here, defensive tackle or some edge rushers as well. But, man, yeah, I don't understand the confidence level there either. I think 1-7 seed has won in the playoffs too since they've moved to 7 seeds, and it was Green Bay against Dallas last year. That's the one. That's the only one. And I don't know. Cool. I mean, good for the confidence. Also, on Craig Bohl, by the way, Wyoming misses them. First year without him, they go 3-9, and they did not look good at all. They look very off. In terms of the Carson Wentz and Josh Allen thing, it's always been something I've thought about of did Bohl look at those guys and be like, oh, they're the same guy?
Right, yeah.
Because he didn't work much with Carson Wentz when he was the starter. Carson Wentz's years starting were really 2014 and 2015, where ultimately North Dakota State still continued on their success. And then Josh Allen's most of the successful years at Wyoming. But he recruited him. And I do wonder if he looked at those two and went, yep, those are the exact same guys, and I'm all in. Because, Carson Wentz, his college
stats have him at 6'5", 235. Allen, 6'4", 230. You know, both can run. Both have a bazooka of an arm. Again, that's who I wanted Allen to be initially when they drafted him. If that happened, I would have been absolutely thrilled. And I'm not rooting for him this week. I want Denver to win. That's why I want the Bills to play in the playoffs. I'd love for him to have a good game and for Denver to ultimately win, but I'm really hoping Denver does not pull an 0-4 Bills. Let's take a quick time out here. Coming up at 11:30, Sal Capaccio will join the show. There was an injury report yesterday for the Bills, albeit effectively a walkthrough in terms of the designations. We'll get more on that when Sal joins the show at 11:30. But if you want to join the show, 803-0550, the number to call. This is WGR.